Hey, what's up, my beautiful people? We are here, another great day inside the Black Actors Studio. I'm your host, Danny Royce, and joining me today is a manager that's taking Hollywood by storm, Tiwana Jackson. Don't move a muscle.
You're tuned into Black Hollywood Live, the world's first digital broadcast network devoted entirely to urban entertainment and pop culture. Tune in right now.
Hey, what's going on? We are here. You know me. I'm your host, Danny Royce. And today I have an incredible manager here. She was just recently in New York Times. And she's a Black manager, strong, independent, and really just going after her dreams and making things happen. She's making things happen not only for herself, but for others, her clients. And I happen to be one of them. Please welcome to Inside the Black Actors Studio, Tiwana Jackson. How you doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm awesome. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, your pleasure. I like that shirt, by the way.
This is going to be interesting. Thank you.
That's a good color.
This one out the closet. Special just for you.
Thank you.
This is going to be fun.
Thank you.
I'm intrigued.
So let's talk about, I want to get right off to the New York Times for just touch on it for just a second. So that was just recently. Mm-hmm. And so what were you feeling? The excitement, anything? I mean, it's New York Times. That's big.
Yeah. It was a lot of things. Mm-hmm. I had to lean on my publicist a lot. I had to lean on my best friends a lot because when I did the interview, we didn't know what the article was going to be about. Mm-hmm. When I was approached, she just said that she was doing a story on Black agents in Hollywood. And
right.
That was all it was.
Right.
So we had an hour and a half long conversation. And based on that conversation, she created the piece that she created.
Wow.
So I was kind of worried because you know me, I'm very, very candid,
yeah.
Very open, very honest. So I was like, I might be in trouble.
Right.
So that was really just, you know, the biggest worry. It was like, ooh, did I say too much?
Mm-hmm.
But it's been really, really well received. So that gave me peace of mind.
That's awesome.
But then it also created a mass influx into my email.
So, blowing up, huh?
Yeah. So now I'm trying to mitigate that.
Okay.
So,
all right. Well, we'll come back to that. But first, I like to start off in the beginning. Where were you born?
Born and raised in Phoenix, Arizona.
Phoenix, Arizona. Nice. Mm-hmm. So, how was your family? Your family growing up? Was your dad and your mother? How was that for you?
You know, I'm from a state that used to be in the news a lot. My family has been in Arizona since the 1800s. So Arizona became a state, I believe,
wow.
Valentine's Day, 1912. So I have very, very deep roots in that state.
Wow.
There isn't much I can do without somebody knowing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's home, basically. And it's been interesting to see how much that state has grown. You know, Phoenix at one point in time was the fastest growing city. When I grew up, there were just cows and like orange groves.
Right.
Now it's just houses and apartments and just people.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting how I kind of came from, you know, what would have been like a small big city that now is this major metropolis. I think it's now fallen to number 12, I think, on the list of like fastest growing cities.
That's awesome. Wow. So let's get into like the household a little bit. Like what made you Tiwana now? Like, how was it for you and your siblings and your mother? Did you have a good relationship with your parents?
I was kind of raised by my dad. So
okay.
I come from a single parent household.
Mm-hmm.
So my father is an alpha male. He is very accomplished. And so therefore, I was raised to, you know, be able to take care of myself.
Mm.
There are things that I know how to do that most women don't know how to do. It's been interesting, you know, simple things like check the oil on your car, you know,
mm-hmm.
know when a mechanic is trying to run game on you. Those are things that my dad took me out into our garage when I was about 15, 16 and said, okay, here's where everything is on the car so you understand what this is because there are people that will take advantage of you.
Right.
So I'm lucky in that regard to where I am independent. I'm not necessarily codependent when it comes to handling business, handling maintenance, you know, navigating the world on my own.
I got you. Okay. So what was your interpretation of a Black man growing up since you were, you know, single father growing?
My dad is just Superman. Like
yeah.
I honestly wouldn't be who I am today if it were not for him. That, I mean, that's the truth. And so it's just funny when I watch the news and, you know, the Glenn Becks and everybody says, oh, you know, they're all drug dealers and in jail.
Right.
And it's just not true. None of my friends have fathers that are like that.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it, you know, just seemed like I had a normal life that any other person had.
That's awesome. Yeah, because you hear about single mothers a lot, but there's some single fathers out there that are doing the same thing and holding it down. Did you have any nicknames growing up?
Yes. I don't want this to skew anyone's opinion. My nickname growing up was Terrible T.
Terrible T. Oh, my God. Okay, we got to know why.
I was quite the handful. I took after both of my parents, I think, in that regard. Luckily, I've outgrown that.
Oh, okay. That's good.
We'll just leave the past in the past.
Leave the past in the past. Where'd you go to the school?
So I went to Tempe High, which is down the street from Arizona State. So everybody knows ASU for being a party school.
Mm-hmm.
When I went to Tempe High, it was my freshman year was the first year the school switched to a year-round format. So we would essentially go to school for 9 weeks and then be off about, I think, a week and a half.
Hmm.
Okay. And then for the holiday break, I think it was like 2.5 weeks. Spring break was 2.5 weeks. So it was nice. Little 9 week bursts.
Right, right.
So.
Okay. So when you were growing up, what was your first exposure to the arts, to acting, to the craft?
You know, I was an athlete. So from the time I was 8 years old, I had been in track and field, basketball. So if I did watch TV, it would have been like my favorite movie as a little girl was Beetlejuice.
Oh,
my dad will tell you, I wore out the tape. I love that movie. So the thing is that in my family, the Smiths in my family tree are all musicians. My cousin Alfred has a memorial, like a mural for him in San Francisco. He was a jazz drummer.
Mm-hmm.
So the entertainment and the arts runs in that bloodline for me.
Right.
So it wasn't, you know, far-fetched. It's not like I'm the only person in my family that, you know, chased this dream. I have another cousin who was acting in Los Angeles and in lots of commercials and on TV as well. So it's just another facet of, you know, what we do.
Right. If speaking of TV, if you're watching this show right now live, I'm going to be checking in on the stream. Every now and then, if you have any questions for Tijuana or myself, please go ahead and ask. And that's what makes this show different from a lot of other shows, because we actually are live. And I appreciate everyone out there supporting and watching and sharing and doing all that for the Inside the Black Actors Studio. So what you said Beetlejuice was like one of your favorite movies. After that, did you like any actors? Did you like any plays or any movies focusing on Black or people of color? Growing up or even in your early adulthood?
Yeah, you know, the one person, I mean, there's so many people, but the one person that I've always just held very closely in my heart was Loretta Devine.
Oh,
a lot of the movies that I grew up watching, she was in them.
Yeah.
And so she's someone that I just really have always held in a high regard. But, you know, thinking about it, it's like, you know, I did watch all of these movies, you know, the Jason's Lyric, the Meteor Man, you know, we grew up on all these like great, I'm going to get you sucker, movies, The Last Dragon.
Wow.
So I did get to have, you know, that Black film experience, you know, now that I'm thinking about it. The one person I will say that is absolutely gorgeously immaculate in person, CCH Pounder. I did background like most actors.
Right.
And I was on the show, I think it was The Shield.
Okay.
And I walked in and I just was blown away. And she's just staring at me and we're just smiling at one another. And that was the first time I had ever seen anyone in person where they were just beautiful.
Just wow.
Yeah.
Did you have any more of those wow moments earlier? Especially getting into, because you said you did extra work. So were you going into being an actor at first, or what was the path there?
So I fell in love with TV. Mm-hmm. And so I became a very, very, you know, involved in watching shows, analyzing casts, you know, knowing what the deals were and all of that as a teenager. And so in college, it was more about just being on set, getting that experience kind of thing, and, you know, seeing what's going on. Like most people, they'll go on set, you know, and kind of just see how everything works.
Yeah.
But, you know, the money's good. You know, if somebody offered me a role, great. You know, but do I think that I'm this amazing actor? No. So you have to be honest with yourself.
Right, of course. And so getting into this industry, Tell us about the first time you stepped into the industry and how that felt for you.
Oh, man. The first time I went on set, I think it was for the show called The District. I think that was the very first time I got hired through Central Casting to work on a show. And that was interesting. We were on location. And so it was some sort of rave scene. And, you know, you have to be pretend to be this, you know, drunk raver or whatnot. And so that was my first introduction to entertainment from that side. And that was where I kind of started to learn about the art of the hustle when it comes to Hollywood. Mm. You meet a lot of different characters, if you will. And if you've ever worked background, you know what I'm talking about. You get people who, you know, think that they know everything because their background, you know. And then when you've got a young, impressionable mind, you think that, you know, you idolize this person. It's like, oh, well, they're working all the time, you know, so what they say must be true. And you just have to understand that everybody hustles, everybody plays a game.
Right. That's very true. In this city, there's a lot of hustling going on every day. Yeah. So let's get into the Jackson Agency, because this is definitely a milestone in your career. But first, I want to know when you came out here to L.A. When was it when you decided to say, okay, I'm going to pursue this and I'm going to come out here to L.A. and really get on the ground, start working?
Officially, 2000. Mm-hmm. I transferred. I went to an HBCU, Jackson State, Sonic Boom of the South.
There you go.
And I ended up at Chapman University down in Orange, California.
Okay.
And so I had been in L.A. since 2000.
2000. Wow. Okay. So about almost 20 years. And so when you came out here, what was your first like hit of reality of this is Hollywood? As you know, everyone has that first hit.
For me, it wasn't necessarily, it didn't involve entertainment.
It involved
a rec league that I was in for basketball.
Wow.
I played basketball in college. That's how I ended up at Jackson State.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, having played sports my entire life, everything was team-based for me. So it's always, you know, all I've ever known in terms of friendship has been my teammates.
Mm.
And when I got into this rec league, I was around women who had been in entertainment, you know, were working in L.A. And so they were more like what we know L.A. to be now. And so for me, that was a big shock. It's just kind of like, hey, I'm your teammate. Let's be friends. And they're just like, go away.
Right.
You know? And so that was kind of the defining moment of like, oh, these streets are mean.
Yeah.
Like, I'm out here, you know?
Right, right. And so starting Jackson Agency, when you started that agency, what year was that?
Oh, we'll go officially 2014.
2014.
I've been on my grind since 2000.
Of course. But I mean, you started your own agency. That's a big step, especially here in, you know, LA. Mm-hmm. So 2014, we're here. How was it for you starting that agency?
It was
rough. In the beginning, yeah.
It was rough. It was not easy.
What are some of the challenges that you faced?
There's so many. We'll start with, you know, meeting different people. You know, part of the process is getting clients. And so in order to get clients, you've got to sit down and meet with people.
Right.
And it turns out I'm an empath, so I take on people's energy.
Mm.
So that can be very draining. But then you also get people who will try out characters on you. Like, they'll literally use your meeting as an audition and play this little role. I still haven't figured out why. You know, I've gone out of my way to say, look, I'm a regular person. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You don't have to, you know, be fake or play this game with me. So that is one question I do have for actors. Like, why are you guys doing this? Like,
why are you being fake?
Just be your authentic self. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, I get what this is. You get what this is.
Yeah.
We're going to have to work together. So let's be open and honest.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of the thing, was, you know, meeting all these different people, trying to figure out who would be someone that I could have a good working relationship with, or could I swallow, you know, not being able to carry on a conversation with this person, but knowing, hey, you know, they have long hair and I need that on my roster.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Sometimes it is about the needs of, you know, what you know certain roles, you know, are going to be.
Right.
Secondary to that was the fountain of youth that I am. I present younger than I am. And so a lot of times people had issues with the recommendations I would make in terms of things they should do to, you know, improve their profiles or get better headshots or go to these schools because, you know, you're wasting your time, energy, and money at these other schools.
Right.
And so that's something that I'm still dealing with. I'm 37. Okay. And I still have people like, how old are you?
Right.
You know? And
that's great for 37. I mean, come on now.
Well, that's beautiful. You know what they say.
Yeah. Black don't crack.
So, you know, you combine that and then I'm unknown. You know, there's really no paper trail about me or anything like that. And then we talk about the elephant in the room of the skin tone.
Yep.
I'm a unicorn at that point. Mm-hmm. You know, so a lot of it was people projecting their insecurities upon me in our meetings.
That's totally get
the
that.
Way I can
yeah,
describe it.
Totally get that. So one of your, I mean, you're pretty much your agency is saying is rooting for the underdogs. Mm-hmm. So tell us how that came about, and you know what that really means to you, rooting for the underdogs.
You know, it's one of those situations where we know that we're in an industry that wasn't designed for us.
Mm.
Okay. And if it was designed for us, we had to fit into a particular role.
Yes.
Okay. And we know that those roles traditionally had been junkie number five. Okay. Thug, you know, absentee father, all of these negative, you know, stereotypes.
Right.
And so, you know, considering even just in my corporate career before I, you know, started my own agency, I had to deal with, you know, this adversity and all of this stuff. And so I just kind of adopted the moniker of, you know, hey, you've got to root for the underdogs. Everybody loves that good underdog story. You
right.
know, and I think that any person who is, you know, new to entertainment, thinking about pursuing this as a career, your back is against the wall. That was one of the things that The Rock had said. He said he kind of, you know, treats every meeting, every day, you know, every opportunity as if his back is against the wall and he's got to fight in order to make it.
Yeah.
So, you know, every agency kind of has its little tagline, you know, and so we needed one. Prior to that, it was the home for working actors. That was our goal. We didn't necessarily want to, you know, I mean, we'll take $20 million a picture, but we were realistic. It's like, look, if we could just be working every day, that would be nice.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so it kind of just turned into, you know, it's now or never. It's do or die for us. And so here we are as the underdogs.
Right. I like that, obviously. And so you mentioned needs, right? Needs of the agency, needs of, you know, as this team, what the team needs to progress as far as acting, your look and all this stuff. So, and then you recently post on social media about pitching and, you know, really expressing yourself through this. So can you touch on that, how you look for clients and how, and based on what you need and something that the actors can do to be proactive in going out there and not really just sitting there waiting for a call?
Okay, that's a lot.
Yeah, we can take it one by one. Though.
Okay, so are we talking about my little impromptu post from yesterday? Because you know me.
Yeah, I mean, come on.
I do videos all the time.
Yes, I know.
This was about pitching, particularly when you are looking for representation. I get it. I've done it as well, where you're trying to show off your personality and your charisma, and you're trying to crack these jokes and these emails, and next thing you know, it's a six-paragraph-long email,
yeah.
you know, with a link to a demo reel at the end. And the truth of the matter is like, all we need to do is see your face, see your demo reel. That's about it. All this other stuff that they're charging you guys $1,000 to do your branding for, for the most part, it's been a waste of money. Because a lot of actors want to be seen a particular way, but then they present materials that don't show them in a particular way. And so there is, I can give an example. I try to always give examples, even in meetings. I had a woman who was blonde, and she wanted to be a stunt, like an action hero type person. She wanted to be like an Angelina Jolie back when she was doing Tomb Raider kind of stuff.
Gotcha.
And so she came and she said, well, you know, I want to be, you know, an action star. And the problem was, is that all of her marketing materials were just her in a bikini being blonde and blue on the beach. So she never went to stunt school. You know, she didn't have any athleticism. So she didn't give me any tools with which to work with when it came to branding her, you know.
Right.
And she never took the initiative to, you know, go learn a martial art.
Right.
Go to the stunt school. You know what I'm saying? Go start working on those things. And that's what it takes. I've always been that person where I'm not going to tell you, no, you can't be this. But I am going to tell you, okay, well, you've got to bring me something that supports this.
Right.
Okay. But I'm also a firm believer in taking the path of least resistance, like electricity does.
Mm.
Okay. there are going to be times where actors are not going to be happy with the way that the world sees them. Okay. We could use you, for example, 6'3", biceps. We've got a straight path to security guard co-star roles for you. Mm-hmm. That's your break-in. Mm-hmm. We know that's not you. We know that you're that leading man, but we know that we have to start somewhere.
Right.
And a lot of the people that I encounter don't have the flexibility mentally to understand that.
Mm.
And so that's where we start butting heads, you know,
right.
what I'm saying? And I can't help someone that I can't work with. You know, one of the things I need is I need someone to be coachable.
Mm-hmm.
That's the most important part.
Yeah.
You know,
it's like, a lot of actors, they want a long jump, you know, and you got to take baby steps, you know, really do.
It's instant gratification, which I can understand that, you know,
sure.
I want instant gratification too, you know,
but
you know, you're in an industry that is very competitive
mm-hmm.
and, you know, we're finding out now, traditionally it was 3,000 submissions per role in a breakdown. Now they're showing us it's 5,000 submissions
yeah.
per role in a breakdown.
It's crazy.
And the number of audition slots are still going to be the same. So now our, you know, percentages are even worse than they already were
right.
in terms of submissions to audition ratios.
Right.
So you have to, you know, be flexible and coachable and find somebody who knows how to play this game.
For
you
sure.
know, there are a lot of people out here that claim they do, but you have to really do your due diligence and your research on these people. There are a lot of bad people, you
mm-hmm.
know what I'm saying, in
yes,
this town.
Yes, of course.
And so that would be the one warning. And I'll always tell anyone, you know, if it doesn't feel right, always trust your gut.
Yes.
Every time I didn't trust my gut, it cost me money. Because
mm-hmm.
then I had to call the attorney. And they had to solve my problem.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes,
so
for
if
sure.
it doesn't feel right, don't do it.
Yes. So how important is that relationship to you with your clients and with anyone, and you know, agents, client, managers, whatever, that they're on the same page, that they know where they're going and where they want to be. How important is that understanding for you?
It's very important. Even at this point now with, you know, the last group of people I developed, we're coming up on 2 years now of working together and going through all of our ups and downs. And then we have something like this where the New York Times pops up.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? We have this interview today. And then we have other interviews coming down the pipeline to where now people are just going to want to come here just because they saw us, you know,
yeah.
in the newspaper.
Yeah.
And so that creates a scenario where I have to protect us because we've done so much work.
Mm-hmm.
We've worked so hard to get to this point.
Mm-hmm.
And I carry that, you know, on my shoulders every day. I love each and every one of my clients. You guys are so much fun. Yeah, there are days I hate y'all. You know what I'm saying? You already know. You know those
yes.
Monday morning
yes.
agendas. You know what those are about.
Yes.
But at the end of the day is, you know, I have you guys' back.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoy working with people that have, you know, mutual respect and trust. And that's ultimately what I have with my current clients. And so that's what I'm looking for anyone new who says, wow, this sounds great. I want to, you know, I want to be a part of this,
right.
you know. We've had people leave and try to come back. You know
mm-hmm.
what I'm saying? You saw
hey.
That post.
Yep.
Okay. So the grass isn't always greener.
Right.
That's the saying.
Exactly. So. Speaking of posts, so social media, I mean, you're pretty active on social media. What are some of the things that you like to post, you like to see, you like to share, just so we can, you know, get... I love that smile, by the way. How important is it for you to be active on social media?
I'm glancing at
yeah.
Francis Perdue of PS Media Talent, my publicist, who is warning me to
keep it
not yes. get in trouble.
Yes.
I like to share information. I'm a community builder.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where all of those posts are coming from. And I'm not saying anything that anybody else doesn't feel. I can sit down and have brunch with casting directors and they'll be like, yo, what is up with actors? Why aren't they coming into
oh, yeah.
the room prepared? Like, what is this? What is that? And I'm like, we're telling them these things, but they're not listening because all they want to do is go on social media and just post, oh, I'm in the lobby at Lisa Fields. Look at me. I have an audition today. Okay. Okay. And that's ultimately what it is. And so
yeah.
there are days where it needs to be said,
yeah.
you know what I'm saying? But it's funny because, you know, you guys don't get to see the types of emails we get. We get people who just mass email everyone in town. So I'll get a mass email where they didn't even blind carbon copy, and it's everybody. I'll go through and be like, oh, hey, that's Jennifer. Oh, hey, that's Chris. Oh, hey, that's so-and-so.
Wow.
So one day, I may have done a video about this but haven't posted it. Somebody got mad and responded. And ripped that person to shreds. And I said, ooh, she had time. she was tired of it. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yes.
There, I have to assume that, you know, a person who is capable of earning an MFA would understand that it's not okay to just use the confetti approach to finding representation.
Right.
And so going back to that post you talked about, the video is up, but what I had on Instagram was just a snippet of it. But essentially, this person came in and was giving the standard issue fluff. Oh, I've heard great things about your agency. Your agency becomes very highly regarded, you know, that kind of thing. And I'm just like, okay, from where? Oh, it's just my friends. Who? You know what I'm saying? I'm that type of person. Yeah. It's like, if you're going to blow smoke, you've got the wrong place for that. You know what I'm saying? Just be honest and be like, hey, you know what? I've watched your videos. I've asked around about you. You know, I need some help getting started. That's ultimately what I am and what I'm all about.
For sure.
You and I came to know of each other because one day I went on a rant about how Latinos are of different ethnicities. And I was feeling some type of way that day after going through all these commercial breakdowns where they keep saying they want people who are Hispanic.
Yeah.
But they weren't accepting my blonde and blue, Kyle Devereaux, and they weren't accepting my black guys who were Afro-Latino.
Yeah.
And I felt like that was unfair.
Yeah.
You know?
It is.
So sometimes I champion a little bit too hard.
Well, I mean, I highly respect you for that. And I mean, it's not just you're truthful and real, but also you offer a lot of tips, free tips, and, you know, things to help actors, you know, further their career, you know, just on social media and all that. So if you haven't got a chance, check her out, please, because you'll learn a few things on social media. And so you recently attended New York Fashion Week.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to us about that. How was that experience for you?
So Francis and I represent Mr. Jack Manson, who is the celebrity stylist for Jamie Foxx.
Awesome.
And so Mr. Manson has his own couture line, Jack Manson custom men's suits, and then he has some casual, you know, wear as intelligent couture.
Mm-hmm.
And so we got an offer to showcase his line, and we went. And
nice.
It was very cold.
it was very cold.
But I'll tell you what, they know how to drive.
Yeah.
I've never experienced driving like that before. It's like better than Grand Theft Auto. It was amazing. Like, I was sitting there in the backseat, right, the whole time, and I'm just like, they can drive. Sometimes I think I just ordered Lyft just because I just wanted to drive. You know, like, it was amazing.
Yeah. I lived in New York for 2 years, and that, man, it's crazy. You got to fit in, because if you drive any different, then game's over. So that was a great experience for you. Did you learn anything out there? Have any experiences that were like, whoa, that's cool?
I learned the art of patience.
Okay.
I got the wink and the nod on that one.
So learn the art of patience. I got it.
I'll move on.
And so I want to go back to New York Times and just talk about your story in there. Because for one, last week, you know, I had Leah Daniels Butler here, and we were just talking about the absentee of colored people behind the scenes, crew, producers, directors, agents, etc. So what was something that you shared in the New York Times about your experiences being a black agent in Hollywood and being, it's not many.
Yeah. There's not.
Yeah.
A lot of it got cut. And it's so funny because, like, now I feel like Hotep's getting ready to come out because I've been saying this, you know, casually, and, you know, it's part of also my degree. My degree is in communication, so I spent a lot of time studying, you know, market analysis, and it was drilled into me that, you know, the medium is the message, and that, you know, he or she who controls the media, you know, controls the masses.
Yes.
Okay. And so the hard part about what I do for a living is being privy to, you know, how that world works, but also contributing to it. There was a lot that, you know, I said to Kara Buckley at the New York Times that didn't make it into it, but there were some things that made it in there, particularly about how an unknown black actress told me flat out that she wanted a white agent. She didn't want to work with me because she wanted a white agent. Mm. So, that kind of stuff happens. I mean, you know, you just try to stay focused and keep it moving. You know what I'm saying? I'm a firm believer that everything happens in life for a reason,
yes,
whether it's good or bad. And so the clients that I have had, it happened for a reason. You know what I'm saying? The clients that have left or I've let go, it happens for a reason. And you just have to keep moving forward. I'm a realist, so I'm not one of those people that's like, everything's great and cookies and rainbows and sunshine. Okay? That is not me. That is only me after I go to the gym.
Endorphins. Nice.
But I try to look at everything objectively and say, okay, you know, there are aspects of this industry that a lot of people don't know exist. So the long and the short of it is that what they've done is they've put more black people in front of the camera, right? They gave us more black showrunners, but your crew is still all white, mm-hmm, and predominantly white male.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Your agents are still all white and predominantly white male.
Yeah.
You know, the post-production people, all of the people behind the scenes are still all white. So consumers need to understand that it hasn't quite changed the way that you think it has. And the truth of it is even, you know, I think I alluded to this once where I had a white woman come in for a meeting and blame her inability to find an agent on diversity.
Wow.
Okay. Meanwhile, I'm still getting breakdowns that have Caucasian,
right.
Okay. And so I'm just like, okay, who told this to you? Oh, well, I met some agent and they said that. And I'm like, they just didn't want to sign you, honey.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's what that is. And I'll be honest, the only time I really see, you know, roles for black people or Asian people or even Latinos or Latinx, mm-hmm, depending on, you know, how you want to call it,
yep,
is typically when there's a showrunner of color. So we're looking at Issa Rae, we're looking at Lena Waithe, we're looking at Shonda Rhimes.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, you know, roles that have substance are when your showrunner is not white.
Yeah.
You have Michael B. Jordan is quoted saying he told his agent to only submit him on roles that were written for white guys.
Hmm.
That right there should have been the shot heard around the world.
Yeah.
He's letting you know that all of the other characters, unless they are white, lack depth.
Mm.
He wants layers. He wants to play,
yes,
right? Because that's,
yes,
what every actor wants, that great character,
yes,
right? So they can just play.
Yeah.
And so, you know, even when we talk about the writer's room, you know, they have this, you know, show us your room hashtag, and we're seeing some writer's room share them. But if you go on that hashtag, you don't have all 100-something plus writer's rooms, but you have, like, what, four?
Yeah.
That are actively using that hashtag.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So when I was at UCLA, a showrunner came in, and someone asked him a question and said, well, you know, what do you look for in a writer? And he talked about how one guy is just there to make him laugh because you're having like a 16-hour day.
Mm.
And the other person is just there because they're like a friend of the family. And then he talked about, you know, like two or three other people, basically all not really skilled. They might throw out good ideas, but they may not be a good writer. So they're good for just plots.
Yeah.
Then he said, I'll have two just bona fide straight up and down writers.
Hmm.
So, you know, the adage of it's not what you know, it's who you know,
exactly,
is still very true.
Very true.
But, you know, as a student of film, as a student of screenwriting, you know, all these things that I studied to try to understand and master this craft, it is really disheartening to know that, you know, no matter how hard I work, no matter how technically sound that I get, I'm still not going to be in that room because I don't have the connections. I wasn't born into it. And so that's been the sobering truth of it. And then you're dealing with, I believe CAA created a site that aggregates all writers of color. But up until we recently had the diversity writer, you didn't have that many. And so now they're like, oh, we've run out. We can't find anymore. And it's like, oh, I can give you like 50 of them right now. I actually rep the writer of the Tamir Rice biopic, you know what I'm saying, Daniel Lee. So it's like, there's tons of them. But then I said, well, hey, how do I get my writers listed on this site? And they said, oh, well, anyone on this site has to have at least one network credit. So we're back at square one.
Yeah.
We can't even break in a new writer.
Wow.
So you just have to find a different way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, create your own content.
Create your
and
own
content. That's why Issa and them created their own content.
Exactly. Yeah, if you can find the role for you, create the role.
Yeah.
So are there any works now out right now or recently out for minorities that you really enjoy? We had the Black Panther, you know. That was dope. Anything else that came out recently that you've either on television, in theater?
Hidden film. Figures gave my heart joy.
Yes, like, that was a good one.
That movie was just dope. You know, and you know, movies are, they're entertainment, so obviously there's going to be some things that weren't factually correct. You know what I'm saying? But, like, that movie was dope because there were movies that I couldn't watch as a kid, you know, like Rosewood and stuff like that. Like, I can't watch movies where we're just being murdered and we're, you know, we're just going to pray it away. Like, that just, it doesn't work for me. So what I enjoyed about that movie was the dichotomy of the leadership, you know what I'm saying, versus the rebel, but the smart rebel, like Janelle Monáe's character. She had all the one-liners, all the zingers, but she still knew her stuff, right?
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Sure.
She walked right into that class and I'm in this class, yada, 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 and sat down and did what she needed to do.
Right.
You know, Octavia Spencer's character had to deal with the nonsense that Kirsten Dunst's character kept throwing at her every 5 minutes. And she still sat down and said, well, I'm about to learn how to do this computer, you know, business. And then, you know, having Taraji go through what she had to, the fact that she had to run to the bathroom, you know, outside across the parking lot, you know, those, it's real. You know, that's the thing. It's like, Black people know it's real because we lived it.
Yeah.
Our grandparents lived it. Some of us still live it.
Yeah.
But I think that for non-Black people, it was eye-opening. I think that slowly but steadily, the wool is being pulled, you know, from over their eyes.
For
but
sure.
We still got a long way to go.
For sure. I want to take a minute and go to our live read here. Nikita Francois, she says, or she asks, what keeps you grounded in this industry? In other words, how do you stay focused and keep pushing forward during great times and times of uncertainty?
My beautiful clients. Like, seriously, that's why there are days where I'm like, hey, guys, can we have a meetup? Like, let's have an agency social.
Right.
When I'm stressed out to the max and I'm just like, I need to, you know, get regrounded, go back to the reason why I'm doing all of this is I meet up with you guys and I see your beautiful little faces and you make me laugh. And sometimes I make you laugh.
Yeah.
And that recharges me.
For sure. That's a great, great question, Nikita. And great answer. So I want to get into a little fun segment.
Oh, is this the super secret segment that you...
Super secret segment.
Okay.
No, but first I want to ask just a few questions that were online. From some actors out there. One asks, how do you differentiate great talent from non-great talent?
Somebody asked me that once, and you know how people just have that it factor? That's just really what it is. You know, it's kind of like all these screenwriting books, right? You can sit up here and go through Save the Cat and hit it beat by beat. You know, someone's taken success and turned it into a formula. But if you don't have that it factor, there's no helping you. It really does take that it factor. Casting will tell you. As soon as you walk into the room, they kind of already know.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Something about your spirit, your aura, your energy, your face.
Right.
You know, when you come in there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wish, you know, I try to break it down scientifically and say, okay, let's have 4 to 6 different headshots. Let's have these reels up. Let's do this. Let's do that. But if you don't have that it factor, the ability to command that audience, it's just not going to happen.
Right. Another question. How important is it to enter in the audition room being dressed as your character?
This one is a double-edged sword because, you know, there's over, 600 casting directors in Los Angeles alone, and everybody has a different opinion. The one thing we did figure out is never enter into the room with a prop gun. that was one thing that we did
That's
figure
not
out.
A good idea.
Yeah. Okay, there's authenticity and then there's, you know, heart attacks. Okay.
Right.
You have to trust your judgment, but you also have to be well versed enough in your craft to know when it's necessary. You know, for instance, we had an audition where they needed to be a clown. Obviously, they're going to come in there in full, you know, clown makeup.
Right.
Sometimes, yeah, you might want to come in there as a lumberjack to seal the deal. It's hard to say. You know, honestly, we have to ask Carol because Carol went out for a role as a stripper. And I never did ask her, like, what did you wear that day?
Really?
She did a really great job on social media of taking this awesome picture of her in, like, a really short dress. But, you know, she's a woman of integrity, so she's not going to go in there and act like, you know, some video girl.
Right.
And so I think there's a fine line that you guys have to skirt with that, with logic and reason. There was a woman who came in once for representation, and she came in dressed like a porn star. And she said that she's looking for new representation because all the roles she keeps getting are for, you know, roles that are sexually objectifying her.
Yeah.
And I told her flat out, I said, it's because of the way you're dressed. You know what I'm saying? She came in with just everything hanging out. So I would say be classy. You know what I'm saying? If you're going to do certain things, there's a way to audition as a hooker and not be trash.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Right.
So unfortunately, I can't tell you yes or no. Just think about it.
Just think about it. Yeah. Be suggestive, I guess. Another question. When auditioning for self-tapes, does the background need to be blue or white?
who came up with this color nonsense?
I know, right? That's a...
Okay.
I mean, it's a lot. It's a question that many actors like kind of face with, especially with self-tapes. So,
oh gosh, let's just make this easy on everyone. Go with the Killian's gray. If you're taking Killian's, you know what I'm talking about. Just do that. Because a lot of times when you guys use that pop-out blue, it looks crazy, especially if you have bad lighting. You have to realize that, and one, if you're not studying lighting and cinematography, you have to study all these different things. That's how, you ever wonder how I'm able to tell you guys all these things? Because I studied it all.
Yeah.
Okay? Because you guys are still, well, I asked my agent, and they said they didn't know. You know what I'm saying? Because they just like, get out of here. They submitted you.
Right.
Get the thing.
Right.
So, you know, you're looking at the studio. You've got backlighting. You've got to have backlighting. You've got to use the 3 points of lighting at a minimum. But now, because all of these cameras are film grade, you've kind of got to double your light a bit and be a little bit brighter to your naked eye than you do with the camera. But all of this boils down to is you need to study the other facets of entertainment, not just your acting craft, to have a better understanding.
Right.
So to err on the side of caution, no more blue. No white, because if you don't know how to properly white balance your camera, you're going to be like yellow and orange and dingy.
Right.
And that's mostly from you guys still being set on tungsten versus daylight. Okay. And if you don't know what that is, go learn it. Kelvin, 5,600 degrees Kelvin, the temperature of the sun.
Wow.
So
just dropping knowledge left and right. Look at
just get gray. Problem solved.
All right. Last question from our online guest. So this one says, how do I help my agent or manager by, how do I help? That's kind of weird the way it's written. How do I help my agent or manager progress my career? I'm pretty sure that's what they mean.
Okay.
Okay.
Because I had this email exchange with another client.
Oh, really? Okay.
He asked that and I was, yeah, flashbacks. Let's start with your profiles. You know that we use LA Casting, Actors Access, and Casting Frontier. Those are the websites that have an agency interface. We don't use Backstage because it doesn't allow us to have a roster, okay?
Right.
I don't use Now Casting. I don't use 800 Casting. So we're talking about these three that exist inside the agency level. You have to go through these profiles and take your time with them. A lot of you are just going through and clicking off everything.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And it's too much. You know, I always tell you guys to have intermediate to expert checked off because very, very rarely is a commercial going to want somebody who's a beginner.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? We already know that, like, if you go out for an audition with, like, Nike for a marathoner as a lead, you have to run on a treadmill as part of your audition. They're going to sweat test you right there as soon as you walk in. So if you think that, you know, you can lie and run game, you're not going to be able to do that on certain things. We do have a lot of stories of people that said, oh, I got my first role because I lied. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And yeah, sometimes it can work out for you. But when it's something that, you know, involves athleticism, you know, and things like that, it's going to show pretty quickly.
Of course.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I did a commercial back in the day for Nike, and I was tired. Mm. We were doing a basketball thing, and they wanted a female lead. And so they had two of us, and we would swap out. And I was not in good enough shape for that, and I was in pretty decent shape.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So that's why I'm always harping on you guys about you have to be in tip-top shape. Like, you just have to be, because you're on set for 12 to 16 hours.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It is hard on the body, and then you're also performing this physical skill as well. So you just really have to think about the things that you can pull off even if you're out of shape. Let's look at it that way. You know what I'm saying?
For sure.
Sam found out the hard way when he went to go shape his, take his special skills. He was like, I twisted my knee.
Ooh.
So you just have to be careful, you know, do things within reason and logic. And you know, always get those special skills clips. That's why I'm always harping on that, because I know you guys lie. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I'm saying, you know what, prove it. You can play baseball, you're shortstop, prove it.
Yeah.
You know, show me a tape.
Right.
And like we said, that's actually translated to auditions for you guys. Mm-hmm. You know, I use the site to its maximum capacity. I use the site the way it was designed to be used. And so that's been our strategy. A lot of your agents don't do that. They don't have to. They've been around for 30 years. Everybody knows who they are. So it's a different animal for us.
For sure.
So first and foremost, profiles. You've got to have 4 to 6 different headshots now. You just do. You've got to have that 3/4 body shot showing off that physique. Even if you are overweight, have that body shot so they can see what's going on. Okay.
Right.
If you're athletic, you know, have that fitness shot. If you are just a straight up and down debutante, just live your best life in your headshots. You know what I'm saying?
Right, right.
You really have to think about your branding, but you also have to think about all the different characters that are in commercials. Let's see if I can remember what it is. I told you guys this once before. I said commercials are for average looking, quirky people with athleticism and health problems.
Mm.
And I said that one day and everyone was like, oh.
Wow.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So hopefully that helps you understand those are the different types of commercials. But at the end of the day, all of them involve you being active. Commercials are either going to make you laugh or they're going to give you hope that with your bad hip, you can still have fun.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And so every time you have a senior who goes out for a commercial, what are they doing? Oh, I'm hiking. I'm jogging. I'm active. You know, I'm not letting my arthritis stop me.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And so that's what commercials are. It's activity based. Mm-hmm. It's showing people that they can still, you know, live their lives regardless of whatever their health problems are. Or, hey, we can help you clean your house faster so you can go back to laying on the couch in your yoga pants.
Right.
That's what they are. And I think that, you know, a lot of you guys don't even study commercials. You don't watch commercials. I find myself now that I'm in it, watching commercials when I'm sitting at a restaurant. Mm-hmm. Like people be talking, I'm just, oh, okay, that's what they end up doing with that.
Yeah.
You know, a friend of mine just sent me the Geico commercial with the barbershop quartet. And I was like, oh, that's what that breakdown was all about.
Nice.
You know, and so that's the thing, too, is we're privy to, you know, what's going on. L.A. is still the biggest market for everything. Mm-hmm. You know, you have things branching out in other cities, but we're still number one. Everything's casting out of here. And we've probably got at least 80 commercials shooting today right now.
Yeah, that's very true. And everything's like we're in the age of streaming now. So like a lot of people are just, you know, passing by commercials and don't really care. But you're right. I mean, you really need to study. And I love how you study like each part of the industry, and don't just focus on what you're doing. You study acting, you study lights, you study the quality of a camera. I love that, and that translates to like how much you care about the craft and your clients and all that. So perfect. I love that. And so we're going to be closing up pretty soon, and I just want to do a quick fun little segment with you. What is your favorite word?
I don't recall.
All right, it can't be said live. I got it. What's your least favorite word?
Oh, I can't say that either.
Okay. What is your favorite sound?
I don't know. I never thought of that.
No?
Huh. Venmo.
Venmo. Okay.
That ka-ching.
The little notification thing? Okay, gotcha. What's your least favorite sound?
I don't know. I feel like there's like a really high frequency that could bother me, but I don't know.
High frequencies.
Yeah, I think that I'm not like the scratching on the chalkboard doesn't bother me.
Oh, styrofoam rubbing together.
Yeah, no, that doesn't bother me either.
Oh, yeah, I can't do that.
But occasionally there's high frequencies that I can hear. I'm like, oh, that's terrible.
And if you were not doing what you're doing now as a profession, what would you do?
I've done so many things. And everything's led me back here. Even when I wanted to quit, something happened that was like, oh, no, you can't quit. So I can't even say that I'm supposed to be doing anything else. I'm starting to just accept that this is what I was meant to do.
Awesome. And last but not least, if heaven was real and you met God, what would you want him to say to you?
Oh. Wow.
That's what he would say. Wow.
Probably you made it.
I like that's fair enough. Fair enough.
You survived.
Yeah, you survived. You made it.
You passed. Come on in.
Awesome. Well, I thank you so much for joining me today inside the Black Actors Studio. Thank you, everyone that was watching live. Thank you to AfterBuzz and Black Hollywood Live for allowing us to be here. Had a great time with you. And I hope you all enjoy the rest of your weekend. And this is Tiana Jackson. Can you tell everyone where to find you?
TheJacksonAgency.com.
There you go. And you can find me everywhere at I Am Danny Royce. Tune in next week, same time, same place, inside the Black Actors Studio. We'll see you later.
On behalf of our BHL staff, we would like to thank you for tuning in to Black Hollywood Live, the world's first digital broadcast network devoted entirely to urban entertainment and pop culture. Check out our Black Hollywood Live YouTube page for even more great programming and amazing content. And be sure to subscribe and like our channel when you do. I'm your BHL host, Nakia Monet, and you can find me on all social media at Kiki Boom Boom or at Black Hollywood Live. Black Hollywood Live, Hollywood redefined.